You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Thursday show, my co-host in crime, Nick Lee. We're glad to have listeners new and old tuning in. We're going to be assessing a handful of free agents on Tinder Thursday. Plus, we're going to take a close look at DJ Dallas's rookie season for the Seahawks. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Since the Seahawks bowed out early in the postseason last month, there's been endless chatter about what went wrong for the team offensively during the final 2 months of the season, four games with 20 or less points in the final eight regular season games, and then held to just 20 points in their playoff loss to the Rams. Joining the Colin Cowherd show today, Russell Wilson weighed in a bit more on the offensive struggles down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, he said things that aren't exactly surprised to us. He said, we had such an electric, amazing start at the beginning of the year. We were able to do everything. We went for it every game, every play, every possession. We hit some bumps in the road. I could have played better. I should have played better. I couldn't do my part too, obviously, as well. And he goes on to think also is on offense, we didn't adjust great throughout those tough games. We had a couple where we could have adjusted better. And that was last year. And I think that ultimately this offseason is really about how can I be the best version of myself. And we can dive into this a bit more, Corbin, but really for me, it was a lot of the same rhetoric and narrative that a lot of us came away with that postseason game was, you know, it's obvious that Seattle's offense got stale. And honestly, I looked back at the total yardage for offense for the season, and the worst offensive games for yardage output of the season for the Seahawks were weeks 16, 17, and the wild card game, right when you need to be playing at your best, they were at their worst. And you know, it wasn't just because the offense got stale, they got stubborn, they refused to change. And was it all Brian Schottenheimer's fault? I think it's naive to think that. And I think, Corbin, that this, with trying to avoid hyperbole, this is the most critical offseason in the Russell Wilson era. This offseason will decide if the Seahawks are going to compete for another Super Bowl under Russell Wilson, because you got to ask yourself, like, look at those quotes. Was this enough of a wake-up call?
Yeah, and I think really the statements that Wilson made today that really stood out to me, that maybe were a little different than we've heard. We've heard about the issues with adaptation and adjustments. Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson talked about that at the end of the season, their end-of-season press conferences last month. And so none of that, as you said, is new rhetoric. We've heard about that. But Wilson was talking about the defense. As the defense kept continuing to play better, that's the time for us to really take off and keep going and keep preparing at the highest level. That's something we really wanted to be able to do throughout the rest of the season. Unfortunately, we didn't go for it as much, I don't think. I think we got a little bit passive. We got to make sure that never happens again. We got to make sure that we do everything we can to be playing this Sunday. So he's referencing, obviously, the Super Bowl coming up in Tampa Bay. And to me, those were maybe the most interesting statements that he made today, just because I can't recall him talking about the offense going passive in his press conference last month. It seems like he was speaking out a little bit more about those struggles and the fact that we just weren't aggressive enough getting the footballs to our playmakers. And of course, then that led into the adjustments as well. But that really is what was so frustrating about the last 8 weeks, because the Seahawks finished with a 6-1 record in their last seven regular season games. But we talked about it time and time again, and I thought they would find a way to get over the hump and get the offense going again. It didn't happen. The reason they were winning is because the defense took a 180-degree turn, and they were one of the best defenses in football in the last 2 months. But the offense just completely unraveled, and they were never able to turn things around. And that's really what is frustrating. We've talked about it time and time again, the inability for the offense and the defense to both play well at the same time. I really think there were only two games the entire year where you could say that happened. The win over the Arizona Cardinals in week 11, where they held on for a 7-point win. The defense made some big plays that game. The offense scored 4 touchdowns. And then I think the Jets game, which ended up looking better with the Jets going and beating the Rams and beating the Browns in back-to-back weeks, suddenly that win didn't look as bad as it originally did against a winless Jets team, but still, the Jets were terrible last year. And so you take those two games out of the equation, either the offense was lighting up or the defense was lighting up. You just didn't have any games where both units played at a high level as well as they could. And unfortunately, the inability to get both of those units aligned playing well at the same time really cost this team once they got to the playoffs.
And it really stinks because I'm looking at the stats here and the numbers for the offense versus defensive output. And you take that offense you had the first five games. Russell Wilson's on an MVP pace. DK Metcalf's setting the world on fire. And you take that with the defense against the Jets and the Rams late in the season, and they're playing this Sunday. That is a Super Bowl team. And I know it's easy to say that about the peak of each unit, but yeah, it's a real shame we didn't. I honestly don't think we got to see the best of this team. I think the best was that Jets game, which kind of sounds a little hollow, but yeah, a little bit better now that they racked off a couple wins. But it really is a shame because they did get passive. And I don't know if it was the cockiness of, hey, we got Russell Wilson. DK Metcalf's a stud that's going to be an all-pro. We got Tyler Lockett, who's catching everything in sight. Let's just roll our helmets out there. We're the Seahawks, and everything will just take care of itself. In this league, you cannot afford to do that. You cannot afford to rest on your laurels and just be complacent. And, you know, we're going to watch two guys on Sunday, especially Tom Brady, who was cursing his teammates out after crying about winning the NFC Championship game. And where is that on the Seahawks team? That's why I want to know is where is that desire to always get better, that is the true fire in not being complacent and comfortable. I'm not sure that was there. I did see it from DK Metcalf a little bit, but as a team collectively, I'm not sure they had that killer anti-complacency fire in them, and it's unfortunate, and that led to their impending and early doom.
Yeah, I don't want to see Russell Wilson cussing out teammates and yelling at him and stuff. I don't think that needs to happen. But this is my viewpoint on DK Metcalf's situation, because there were a lot of people giving him flack in the playoff game because there was video of him during the game having a bit of a tirade on the sideline. And to be honest with you, I can't blame him. I think that he really was getting frustrated with the fact that we are not putting points on the board. We're not moving the ball. And I know that we are capable of doing that. And so there was definitely some pent-up frustration there. To be honest, the more I've looked back at it, yeah, the next play, maybe they were forcing it to him on that screen play, but that's not DK Metcalf's fault. He's not the reason that that play ended up getting snuffed out and picked off for pick six. It just happened to be a sensational play by the corner getting past Freddie Swain as the blocker. I mean, he just had that read like a book. And so I liked the passion that he displayed there because you didn't see enough of that fire down the stretch. And this team just was, they were capable of doing so much more. And again, you mentioned Brian Schottenheimer. Of course, he deserves some of the blame, but I'm going to continue to say, I think he got a raw deal because I think when you've watched the film, that there were a lot of plays left on the field by number three. And I'm glad that he's at least the last couple of times he's spoken publicly, he has taken accountability for that, and it's been genuine. He's not just saying it just to say it. He has been holding himself accountable because he did not play well in the last 2 months, not near as well as he did the first couple months of the season, and he missed opportunities. He became gun-shy. Maybe you can blame Pete Carroll a little bit for that, for wanting to cut down turnovers, and maybe they overcorrected. There's so many different elements to this. What the Seahawks have to hope is that Shane Waldron, he was the guy that Russell Wilson wanted from all the sources I've talked to all along. That was the guy in this process that Russell Wilson wanted to be the coordinator for this team. What you got to hope is that Russell Wilson hits the reset button, Waldron comes in, and he's going to have that balanced offense that's also very aggressive. They will take their shots when they're there. They'll work the short to intermediate game. They'll work the ground game. They get all that going. We know the talent is there for the Seahawks offense to be one of the top two or three in the league and sustain that through the season. That is going to be the key. If they can do that, then they have a great chance to get to the Super Bowl next season, especially if the defense plays anywhere close to what it did those last couple months of this season. When we come back for the second quarter, it's time for Tinder Thursday. We've got four free agents upcoming for the Seahawks, two on offense, two on defense, and we're going to decide if we want to swipe right to re-sign the player or swipe left to let him walk. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Thursday show, my co-host, Nick Lee. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now, the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. It's time for Tinder Thursday. And Nick, this is actually going to be the first time that you've taken part in this segment with me. Rob and I have done a couple of these looking at first players that could be extended by the Seahawks this offseason. And we looked at four free agents in an earlier episode. We're going to do the same today. Two on offense, two on defense that are going to become free agents when the new league year opens in mid-March. And how we're going to be playing this, those that are listening that didn't hear last time, or maybe you're not familiar with Tinder, we have two options. You can swipe right to re-sign that player and, of course, give your reasoning for that, or you can swipe left and indicate, you know what, we're going to let you walk, have fun with your next team. And so this is going to be a lot of fun with you and I debating a little bit. Rob and I had some very different opinions on this in the first four free agents that we covered, including a player like Mike Iupati. So let's start on the offensive side of the football. We'll start with maybe the toughest decision the Seahawks have to make free agency-wise when you're looking at positional value, how much he's helped this offense, and how popular he is in the locker room with the fan base. And that is Chris Carson.
Yeah, this is the tough one. And luckily, I never had to go through the Tinder process. I know some people found some great success with the app, but I met my wife the old-fashioned way. Even though I'm 29, I've never had the Tinder app on my phone. That's pretty – I don't know if that's – as a millennial, that's an accomplishment, but I'm going to treat it as an accomplishment. I don't know. But Chris Carson, this is just a really, really tough call. And I'm going to go straight up. I'm swiping left. And let me tell you why. I know, Corbin, you with the running back spirit you have, I don't know which way you're going to go. But for me, this was really hard. I know some people are thinking about the franchise tag, which right now is at about $10.8 million, according to Over the Cap. That seems pretty steep for a guy that had less than 700 rushing yards and only played 12 games last year. So, yeah, that's a 908-yard pace over 16 games. But that's just the thing with me, with Chris Carson, his injury history. He's become unreliable in a way because he runs so violently, plays so hard with such a high motor that at any time you just assume that he's going to go down with an injury. And unfortunately, he has just about every season he's been in Seattle. And I'm not sure how much more the Seahawks can gamble on that in 2021 when the cap is tight, draft capital is low, and you can't afford to miss on deals. And honestly, for me, it's also about Rashad Penny in 2021. It's a do or die season for Rashad Penny. I mean, he's already risking the bust label as a first round pick who really has not got going in 3 years. And Carson did set a career high with 4.8 yards per carry. His workload was limited. His value was diminished after that a bit in 2020 with that. His lowest approximate value per Pro Football Reference since his rookie year when he played only four games. So I think you roll with Rashad Penny, maybe a teaser here, DJ Dallas, maybe bring back Carlos Hyde. I think the price tag will be too much with how limited the resources will be for such, I don't want to really call him unreliable as a whole, but man, the injury history is what really makes me hit the brakes here and swipe left.
And these situations are always fluid. So if you read my article a few weeks ago, I wrote a free agent primer on Chris Carson, and this is before Shane Waldron was hired. And he was the first free agent that I actually looked at. And my prediction was that he was going to get a two-year deal worth $16 million, with only a handful of those millions are going to be guaranteed. And that's because of his injury history. I have a feeling that the running back market is going to be even less favorable than normal, because every team is going to be facing a cap crunch due to COVID-19. And I actually think that could help the Seahawks bring him back. But I'm going to throw people for a little bit of a loop here. I'm actually going to agree with you here, as much as it pains me. This is one that I had to really think about. But I'm going to swipe left because of the addition of Shane Waldron. And here's my rationale. I've talked about this in an earlier episode. Who knows what this run game is going to look like? I even asked Shane Waldron about this in his intro press conference a couple of days ago. I straight up said, you know, Brian Schottenheimer adopted 70-75% of the previous offense. Do you expect it's going to be that way when you take over, or is there going to be more of the elements that you want to bring to the table? And he gave a pretty generic answer, as I anticipated that he would, but he made it clear that they're going to be doing a lot of the core things that he wants to do, and he's going to be working with the rest of the coaches together. So there's going to be some blending, obviously, but if they're doing anything like the Rams offense, I expect a lot of single back under center. And where has Rashad Penny been in his best dating back to his time at San Diego State?
Yep.
Under center, in single back, or with a fullback in front of him. I just have a feeling this wide zone oriented run game is going to be exactly what springs Rashad Penny. I think it's a much better system fit for him. I don't know if you can say the same for Chris Carson. I think Carson's a good enough back. He can handle any system, and he's got the quickness to run outside zone. We've seen that. But I think this is really an offensive scheme, if it's like the Rams in any way, shape, or form, that is going to fit Penny well. And this is a class that's got some good running backs coming in. I could see the Seahawks using one of their few draft picks they have on a running back as well. They've got a couple other guys on the roster they like. Carlos Hyde's going to be cheaper to re-sign, and he might fit that outside zone running scheme well too, especially if they're still going to run a lot of shotgun. Again, there's a lot of things we don't know, but for that reason, I am swiping left. I would not be shocked if he's brought back. I just think system fit-wise now, it makes a little less sense to spend that money. Now, let's go to the tight end position. Jacob Hollister was the third. He was third on the team 2 years ago, even though he only played in 11 games. He was third on the team in receiving yards and third on the team in receptions. Had a really good first season with the Seahawks this past year with Greg Olsen arriving, Will Dissly being healthy. He didn't get near as many opportunities. He had a few games that he played really well. He had a couple touchdowns that Russell Wilson didn't get to him late in the season either. So not all of it was his fault, but he certainly had a decline in production after they gave him a second round tender. They don't have Greg Olsen anymore. So maybe Hollister makes sense to re-sign. What say you, Mr. Lee?
This is another one. I was really high on Jacob Hollister at the beginning when they brought him in from the Patriots. I thought this is a guy that could be a sneaky good acquisition and be productive. And for the most part, I was right in 2019. And yeah, I think Greg Olsen kind of hogged a lot of the attention for the tight ends, because I just wrote a piece about Will Dissly. I think that Will Dissly fell under the category of kind of got robbed a little bit of some opportunities at the tight end position because of Greg Olsen. Obviously Greg Olsen, his reputation preceded him, even though it didn't quite work out. But I'm going to swipe right here, actually. After Will Dissly, the tight end room in Seattle is about as bare as my pantry after Thanksgiving. Colby Parkinson is an intriguing guy, but he's not that, like, hand-in-the-ground, blocking, down-and-dirty tight end like Dissly can be or Hollister. He's a bit more of that out, spread out and almost like Jimmy Graham-style tight end. So I'm not quite sure how that fits, especially, like you mentioned, with Waldron's offense. The tight ends are featured there. So I think you bring him back. I think that there can be a good, you know, Seahawks-friendly deal that can be made. I think Hollister was just one of those guys that, for the most part, you mentioned some of the misses this season with Russell Wilson and him connecting, but he's just one of those guys that seems to be in the right place at the right time sometimes. 6 touchdown catches in 2 seasons and relatively limited action is pretty impressive, I think. And so just with the production, his, it's hard to say the knowledge of the system, but at least relationship with the offensive players and Russell Wilson, I think that's valuable. And I think you got to think about depth. I mean, I know people are excited about Tyler Mabry as well. But yeah, after Will Dissly, you got to wonder about depth and especially experience. Will Dissly is now the most experienced tight end in the room. So I think you got to bring Jacob Hollister back at least you have to start a camp, a team-friendly deal, and see how it works out.
I'm going to swipe left, and I think it has to get, again, do with the system fit. I look at the tight ends that the Rams have generally had the last 3 or 4 years. Tyler Higbee's a bigger body tight end. Gerald Everett is bigger than what Jacob Hollister is. And I'm going to throw this out there. I think there's a chance Gerald Everett could be playing in Seattle this next season.
I've seen a lot of that.
The Rams don't have money to play with right now, especially after making that trade for Matthew Stafford. I could see a Rams player or two in free agency coming to Seattle. I don't think Everett is going to command a huge contract in free agency. He's been their second tight end, but he's a guy that's capable of blocking. You can use him in line. He can play outside in the slot. He's used to the system, so it's always nice to have players like that around when you have a new offensive coordinator on your staff. So I think there's a good chance that Gerald Everett ends up coming in, because as you mentioned, there are some depth concerns. I also think there's reason to be excited about Tyler Mabry. I talked about him a lot in training camp last year, how much he wowed me. No Stephon Sullivan anymore. I could see maybe Mabry playing himself into a roster spot next year. And so I just don't know that the system fits for Hollister anymore. He's a player I really like. If Schottenheimer was still calling the shots, I would be swiping right. I'm just not sure that he fits the type of tight ends that Waldron's going to want to execute this offense. So I'm actually going to swipe left. I think there will be some interest from other teams out there on one-year deals. Maybe the Seahawks bring him back, but I'm just not seeing it with the system fit here. Let's go on defense here real quick. I think this is one that we probably won't discuss too much, which is unfortunate, but Bruce Irvin suffered a torn ACL in week 2. He's 33 years old. Only got to see him for a little over a game and a half. It stinks, because I really thought Bruce was going to give this team a lift. He had a really good training camp, and he looked re-energized being back in Seattle. But according to Pete Carroll, he had to have a second operation recently. So I don't even know if he's going to be able to play at the beginning of this upcoming season. There's some major question marks there. I know for sentimental reasons it might make sense to swipe right, but I'm sure you probably agree with me on this, especially with Daryl Taylor coming back. Unless he's going to play for veterans minimum or a little above that with some incentives, I just don't see any reason that you would do anything other than swipe left here.
100%. I'm going to fight the Seahawks fan, you know, history bias there. He was great in his first run, and thanks for the memories. But they made it a whole year basically without him, and he'll almost be 34 years old next year. And he, like you mentioned, might have a long way to go for recovery with limited cap space. I think the Seahawks really need to play it safe, and Bruce, bringing back Bruce Irvin for anything more than veteran minimum would not be a safe play. So, yeah, I'm swiping left.
Yeah, it's an easy decision for me. And again, I hate saying it because I'm a big Bruce Irvin fan and I loved the signing last year. I just think when you look at the age, the fact he had multiple surgeries and the depth they have, the cap concerns that they have. He was mentioning on Twitter, if he wasn't back in Seattle, that he was done playing. I have a feeling that's probably where we're leaning here. This might be the end of the line for Bruce Irvin with those injuries. It's unfortunate, but that's not one that I had to put too much thought in. Unfortunately, again, a player that I've been a big fan of, and I think he's done great things for the Seahawks. I just think this is a business, though, and business decisions tell me no Bruce Irvin coming back next year, given the age, the injury, and the depth that they have at the position now. Cornerback Shaquille Griffin. We talked Quentin Dunbar on the first edition of Tinder Thursday. This is the other one, aside from Chris Carson, that's probably going to be extremely difficult to make a choice on, given the fact that Griffin was a Pro Bowler 2 years ago, but his 2020 season was underwhelming. It was inconsistent in a lot of regards. He's still young. He was a guy that was a third-round pick. They really love him, the coaching staff. This just feels like this is going to be one, though, that really nobody knows what to expect heading towards free agency.
You know, for me, using a dating, since we're on Tinder, a dating kind of analogy, this is one where, you know, things might be staling out, getting stale, and so you kind of take a break or maybe end things cordially, and then you both kind of feel around for a little bit and realize you're pretty good for each other. I'm going to swipe right here. I'll use that analogy, even though I have no idea how to use Tinder because I never had to use it. But he knows the system. Now, where the Seahawks have had a lot of turnover, like we mentioned, in offense and the defense, maybe besides some things to get better and tweak and improve on, generally the system's going to be the same under Pete Carroll. So he's familiar with that. I think familiarity has a good price. He's valued more in Seattle, I think, than anywhere else. he would be, like I mentioned, you know, put the feel. It's, I don't think there's anything wrong with him saying, you know what, let me see how valuable the market is. And that he might turn around and say, you know, I'm sorry. You know, we'll both sides will say, I'm sorry. Then embrace. he's not elite. He's not an elite cornerback. I think after 4 years, that's pretty apparent. He's just a bit too inconsistent. Yes, he had that Pro Bowl season. And in some ways, he had just as good of a season this year in, like, passer rating allowed and things like that. In other ways, he didn't. That Pro Football Focus was certainly not a fan of him this year. But, you know, he's not a liability. And if you can find a common good price, I'll take it for sure. You definitely have bigger problems in 2021 other than Shaquille Griffin playing outside corner. So, yeah, I'm a swipe right. I think that there's a pretty good chance that these two sides can come together again.
So I'm going to – I think Seahawks fans are going to be going, where's the money being spent here? Because I'm going to swipe left for the fourth time on four free agents here. And now, here's the thing. If what plays out, if what transpires as you predict happens and he hits the market and the interest just isn't there and he comes back to the Seahawks, then absolutely it makes a lot of sense for them to bring him back, even if it's on a one-year deal to keep proving himself, try to see if he can get back to his 2019 level. But I look at the free agent corners that are hitting the market, and even with the cap squeeze, teams are looking for cornerback talent, especially young players that still have upside, which Shaquille Griffin does. And I just have a feeling that he's going to hit the market and there's going to be more than enough interest there financially from other teams that the Seahawks are not going to be willing or going to be unable to match. And for that reason, sticking with what I said in an article a couple weeks ago, I think when you look at the inconsistencies in his game, some of the issues he had with missed tackles, he did have three picks this year, but generally in his career, that's been an area that has not been a strength for him, creating turnovers. I just don't know that he is the player that I think you've seen enough now to feel he's not a shutdown corner. I don't want to pay shutdown corner money when I've still got Trey Flowers and DJ Reed available. Quentin Dunbar, I could bring back on a one-year deal for peanuts, and I can go draft a corner. I think the Seahawks are an organization that would be willing to take that risk if the price is too high for Shaquille Griffin. And I just have a feeling that that's what's going to play out because it's not a great free agent market at the cornerback position. I just have a feeling there's going to be offers there the Seahawks are not going to be able to match because of their cap situation. And so as much as I think they want to bring him back because he's a homegrown player and he's popular, I just think it's going to be a really tough situation for them to pull it off. So I'm going to swipe left based on reality. I hope he comes back because I'm a big fan of him. I think he's a great kid, and I do think he's got a lot of upside. I'm skeptical the Seahawks are going to be able to keep very many of their free agents based on their cap situation right now. When we come back for the third quarter, it's time for our weekly rookie spotlight. We were talking about Chris Carson's free agent situation. One player that might have an impact on whether the Seahawks decide to re-sign him or not could be DJ Dallas. We're going to look back at the former Miami standout's rookie campaign. When we return, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It's officially Super Bowl week. The Buccaneers and the Chiefs battling for the Lombardi Trophy in Tampa Bay. Tons of crucial sporting events happening in coming weeks. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust. That's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. When it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as that feeling of accomplishment, of hitting your fitness goals and feeling great about yourself. Echelon can get you there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their Echelon Stride smart treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity, Echelon gives you a fun, challenging workout from the comfort of your home. The EX7S is Echelon's latest state-of-the-art innovation that takes cycling to the next level. The EX7S connected bike is built with performance, flexibility, and durability in mind. The EX7S is the bike for competitors at heart. Their world-class instructors will motivate you with thousands of daily live and on-demand studio-level classes, always available when you need them. And unlike their competitors, Echelon is available and affordable for everyone. And one membership lets up to five family members all work out at the same time. Right now, you can try any Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days. Simply go to echelonfit.com/lockedon. That's echelonfit.com/lockedon. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. Thursdays on Locked On NFL are a must listen as Ryan Tracy and Jake Liskow break down teams across the NFL from an analytics and team building perspective. Get the expert analysis on your favorite teams from Ryan and Jake every Thursday. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get your podcasts. We now are wrapped up with the season, Super Bowl coming up here. And as we've been doing for the last several weeks, it's time for a Seahawks rookie spotlight. We are now to our fourth selection for the Seahawks in last April's draft in the fourth round, one of two fourth round selections that the Seahawks made, running back DJ Dallas out of Miami. And I'll admit, Nick, I remember when we talked about this after the draft, this was a pick that I thought was a sneaky good one because the film that I had watched, he fit what Seattle likes in the backfield, short and stocky. He's not necessarily a guy that's going to truck people, but with that build, he has the ability to break through arm tackles and kind of pinball off of defenders, and he's a former wide receiver. So I loved the fact that he could help them as a third down running back potentially, and he might have had one of the best training camps of any player on the Seahawks roster, and the coaches were just raving about him. And then he was held out the first two games, a healthy scratch. And so that was a bit perplexing. But he did get to start a pair of games this season. And while his rushing numbers overall, he averaged 3.2 yards per carry, not a great number. But he did rush for 108 yards on the season. He had a couple of touchdowns as a runner. He had a touchdown as a receiver, 17 receptions for 111 yards. And he didn't get a ton of offensive snaps. It did feel like we saw what this kid could become down the road with a wide variety of skills. We saw him bounce off some tacklers. We saw some surprising shiftiness. We saw the hands out of the backfield, the ability to motion him out of the backfield to receiver. His pass protection skills, it was a bit of a struggle for him at first, but he really started to figure things out before an ankle injury ultimately ended his season in December. But I thought overall, while there were plenty of hiccups for him in his limited action, I actually thought we saw a lot more upside from him than what we've seen from Travis Homer at the running back position. And I think that gives him a chance moving forward to maybe be a player that factors into getting a lot of carries and a lot of snaps in the backfield for the Seahawks next year and beyond.
Yeah, when they selected DJ Dallas, I definitely was comparing him to the selection of the previous year with Travis Homer. Same college, Miami. Very different running backs. However, I immediately just watching a couple of clips of him in Miami and especially after training camp, I just thought he is a more complete back than Travis Homer. I think Travis Homer is a good special teamer, maybe third down, catch the ball at the backfield or make a couple plays here and there and a nice change up back. But I think DJ Dallas has the tools, the physical tools to really become, and maybe not a bell cow. I think that people throw that term around too much, but a good, solid option at running back. And I think that he's a guy that will probably maybe factor into this to the decision whether or not to bring back Chris Carson. I think if the Seahawks don't bring back Chris Carson, I think that's a vote of confidence and belief in DJ Dallas and what he can do. In those few starts, yeah, he averaged 2.3 yards per carry in that first game against the 49ers. That was pretty rough. But yeah, he did. There were some times where you're like, you know, that's the guy that I could see being maybe a future 1B back. And I don't know if he'll ever be the bell cow 1A back, but he's certainly a guy that you wouldn't mind having in your backfield. And I think that's, yeah, if for some reason Chris Carson didn't come back and Rashad Penny is the number one guy, I could probably sleep at night pretty well knowing that DJ Dallas is number two, given a full offseason of NFL regimen, a full, you know, with nutrition and fitness and just learning the system. And I think with the way the Rams use running backs, I think that also could benefit DJ Dallas as well as, like you mentioned, Rashad Penny. So, and Pro Football Focus was in limited action pretty complimentary of him as well, giving him a 72.1 grade. Sample size, again, a little limited, but I like what I saw, and I saw the desire to get better. And if he's your 1B running back, I think that's okay.
Yeah, that would be the ceiling for me for DJ Dallas. I don't think that he's a bell cow or a workhorse back. There's a few concerns that I have. I didn't see the burst. And obviously, if you saw his 40 time, you can understand that. He is not a blazing speedster. That is not his game, though he used to be a pretty darn good kick returner. And a lot of that doesn't come down to your top speed. It comes down to acceleration and your vision. And he has those. He has decent acceleration. I thought he ran kind of tentative at times, the couple starts that he had for the Seahawks filling in for Carson and Hyde. And that was not something I saw in this Miami film. At the same time, he has not played the running back position for that long. When he came to Miami, he was a receiver and he ended up transitioning positions. It's a position that's pretty easy to get acclimated to. So I don't think the learning curve is that steep. That being said, he hasn't played a lot of snaps at that position, even dating back to college. And so that's something that's working in his favor. I just don't know that he's got the explosiveness to be an every down kind of back. I think he can definitely be a change of pace back. To go with Rashad Penny, really, those two have major differences in their skill set. And so I think you could have those two be 1A and 1B as long as they can stay healthy. Dallas had a few injuries in college. He got banged up at the end of this year. And we know that Penny's had his struggles with health since coming to the league. So you'd like to have Travis Homer, maybe another back around if you were going to go that route. But I certainly could see that playing into Seattle's decision-making process with Carson as well as Carlos Hyde. Rather than spending big bucks on veterans, they have two players in Dallas and Homer that they've drafted recently that they like, and Rashad Penny obviously being the first-round player, and again, the system fit. I think the outside zone system would be pretty decent for DJ Dallas as well. I think we've seen him handle plays like that. He actually ran outside pretty well in his limited opportunities last year. And the hands he's got in the backfield, to me, he is your third down running back next year, regardless of what happens. And again, he and Rashad Penny together could make a lot of sense. There's risk there because they've had injury histories and neither one of them has had a big NFL season. But we've seen the Seahawks be able to find success with players like that if they choose to go that route. And I do think that plays a big role. If he and Rashad Penny are the two guys next year, then I could see DJ Dallas giving them 400 or 500 rushing yards and contributing 300 receiving yards out of the backfield, especially in Waldron's system where he may get a lot of opportunities. They're going to be better at running screens. At least that's my belief at this point. I expect that that's going to be a bigger part of their game and they're going to be more effective at it. DJ Dallas can be a weapon in that regard. So I can see him being a guy that catches 25, 30 passes. I mean, like I said, he caught 17 for him last year, and he really didn't play very many snaps for the Seahawks on offense throughout the entire season. So that's pretty impressive. When he was in the game, Russell Wilson was getting him the football. So I think the prognosis for him is pretty good next year. Again, I don't see him being a feature guy, but I like the 1A, 1B analogy that you used there, that I think he could absolutely be that secondary running back that still gets a lot of snaps and gives you value because he can do a number of different things well. He's not necessarily a master of anything, but he's really good at a lot of different skills.
And for what it's worth as well, looking back on the draft, fourth round selection, if the Seahawks, if, you know, rewind to that and they're just like, okay, fourth round, they're picking a running back here. Either way, and you look at the production of the rookie class, obviously you have Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, Antonio Gibson, Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift. Those guys had pretty good rookie seasons. But when you look about who was available, and that's 144 slot in round four, DJ Dallas was the most productive running back after that. There is no running back that was drafted after DJ Dallas that was more productive than DJ Dallas. So if you're looking at that's some silver lining and some things to build on for next year. And I think that this kid still has a pretty darn bright future.
This episode was brought your way by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today, using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana. 10 design masters have each produced a set of 10 uniquely beautiful diamond rings, and they're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com. This exciting collection of truly unique limited edition diamond engagement rings is available now only at BlueNile.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Nick at NickLee51. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's Blue Friday episode, we've got a special guest from the Seahawks that's going to be joining the show. Can't wait to share his unique story on his journey to the NFL. You won't want to miss it. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.